universalists do get awfully darn universal at this time of year. I think most of us realize that people have been doing a lot of the rituals, at least in the northern climes of Europe and so forth, long before the angels and the stars and the camels and the manger and so forth. Usually we throw in Hanukkah as well, but Hanukkah messed us up and came a little early this year. And then there's the newer celebrations like Kwanzaa and so forth, and they're all just fun. Today, of course, is the second Sunday of Advent. That means something is coming. It comes from Latin Adventus, which means arrival. And if you're a divinity student and you want to be particularly pretentious, as many divinity students do, you will call it the parousia, from the Greek meaning arrival, but a special kind of arrival, the arrival of a dignity or a dignitary or a leader. So whenever the president comes to Manhattan and screws up the traffic for a weekend, that's a parousia. And what you realize as you study in divinity school, if you want to do that, is that Advent, even though it says it's about an arrival, really isn't about an arrival. It's about waiting. That's what it's about. That's what Advent is about. That's what parousia is about. And what they're waiting for is Christ, the Messiah. And so the primary question of Advent theology is who or what is the Messiah? And how many times, if any, has he arrived before? Now, in terms of what the Messiah is, nobody really seems to agree other than the fact that it's almost certainly a he. In the Old Testament, there's several of the prophets that say he's going to do some great things. Isaiah and Jeremiah and the lamb lies down with the lion and all that. He's going to bring peace and righteousness to all. And so that messianic hope has went on for hundreds of years before they started celebrating Christmas. Now, there's a problem in the translations in that this he that's going to do this stuff, it's uncertain whether it's the Old Testament God or some sort of prophet, like an Isaiah or a David or somebody like that. They're never quite sure, and there's an argument whether this is going to be God or it's going to be a person. Sometimes you even think that this he is sort of a collective, that somehow humanity is going to do this. You know, the way we used to say man, meaning all of humanity. It's that sort of linguistic sort of thing. So Christianity solved this problem by saying the Messiah is going to be both God and a man. Okay, it seems like kind of a logical stretch, but I get where they're going with this. And the great proclaimer of Advent is John the Baptist. The words I read at the end of John, that's not about Christ. That's not about the Messiah. That's the way people, the New Testament describes John the Baptist. And John the Baptist spends most of his life saying he's not the Messiah. He's just announcing the Messiah. Which reminds me of a group called Tenacious D. I don't know if you're aware of them at all. The comedian Jack Black has a group called Tenacious D, and they had a minor hit called Tribute. And Tribute tells a story of Tenacious D, the band, is going along the road, and they come across the great demon who's going to eat them up and devour them if they don't play the greatest song in the world. So under this kind of pressure, they actually do play the greatest song in the world, frustrating the demon tremendously. But then they forget the song, and they can't play it anymore. So the song Tribute, the chorus is, this is not the greatest song in the world. This is a tribute to the greatest song in the world. And that's basically what John the Baptist is doing. I'm not the Messiah. I'm going to tell you about the Messiah. So they say, so who are you? Who are you, John the Baptist? Are you a prophet? Are you Elias? And he says, and I think this is one of the great biblical quotes, the one who waits for the days of peace and righteousness, he says, I am the voice crying in the wilderness. That's what waits for the Messiah. Now, the other question is, how many times has the Messiah arrived? For most of the world, the answer is zero, since the proof is that, well, peace and righteousness have not exactly triumphed. But again, here Christianity has a unique answer, and that is that Jesus was the Messiah, but since most people didn't recognize this, he was crucified, which, while it manages to save believers from the remission of their sins, it did not bring peace and righteousness to the world. That's next time, when he comes back. Okay, well, when will that be? The good question. There's a fellow named William Miller who said it would be on March 21st, 1843. He was wrong. So then he said, I've made a slight miscalculation. It's going to be March 21st, 1844. He was wrong again. His followers were called Millerites. Now they're called Seventh-day Adventists. And after 1844, he got the idea. He said, well, he's coming, but you know, I guess I'm not going to really pin it down to the exact day. And I think that showed some wisdom, because the Seventh-day Adventists have survived to this day and do lots of good thing in the world. Opened some of the first health food stores in America, for one thing. It says in the Bible, nobody knows the hour or the day. The Incas didn't get it right. You know, they were supposed to be last year sometime. And I forget the name of the old TV or radio evangelist who said it was going to be a particular day. No, that was wrong too. In the play and movie Inherit the Wind, where the Clarence Darrow figure is talking to the William Jennings Bryan figure, he talks about the seventh day of creation, God creating the day in 7 days. And he says, how long do we know how long the days were? He didn't create the sun until the third day. How do you measure? Maybe some of those days were longer than 24. Maybe there were a thousand of our years was one day. So what I'm getting at is, maybe this is the last day. Maybe the world is coming to an end today, except we don't know how long the day is. You know, in terms of geological time, we know that there will be an end to this planet, and we may or may not have space travel and made our way to the next galaxy before that happens. But it's just the idea that the time that humans have is so limited in terms of the time that there is. Maybe this is the last day. So, in any event, whoever, whatever the Messiah is, and how many times he, she, or it has or has not come and might come again, there's a kernel of hope for peace and righteousness that we can affirm every day, however and whoever it might come about. In those opening words from Luke, just think of how many quotes from those four verses have come into our vernacular. Tender mercies. Great number of songs and poems and prayers have written just about tender mercies. Not to mention a tremendous movie with Robert Duvall where he plays a recovered country and western singer. Give light to him, to them that sit in darkness. Jesus certainly took up that phrase from John the Baptist. Guide our feet into the way of peace. Guide our feet. It's one of the gospel songs. It's in our hymnal. Guide our feet while we run this race. That's where it comes from. You know, at one point, we thought that the Obama administration might bring forth a post-racist political environment. Now I see it may have brought about a post-hope political environment. But the Christmas story is a great way of expressing and gathering all that hope as we wait for the Messiah or somebody like him. My first relationship with Advent was through the Advent calendar. It's a German Lutheran tradition. And every year, my grandmother, on the first Sunday of Advent or thereabout, would give me an Advent calendar. It was about this big. It was sort of cardboardy stuff, and it had a lot of glitter on it. And there was a little thing that you opened for each of the days, and they got gradually bigger. You know, the first one, I would open it, and it might be a picture of a lollipop or something. And then it would get a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger until we got up to Christmas. And that was, especially when you're a kid and you can hardly contain yourself waiting for Christmas, well, at least, you know, I'm opening that Advent calendar. And I always look forward to getting the Advent calendar. And then when Kathleen and I got married, the year 00, however you call that, I discovered that my stepdaughter, Erica, also always got an Advent calendar from her German grandmother, her Oma. And Erica's Advent calendar had chocolate. That is, you would get the Advent calendar, and where I got like a picture of a piece of chocolate, she actually got a piece of chocolate. It started out a little bitty piece of chocolate, and each day she got a piece of chocolate. And here I was 51 years old, and I was jealous of my stepdaughter. Because I got it reminds me of one of my father's favorite cartoons. He said, I had a mouse, I wanted to catch the mouse, but we didn't have any cheese. So I put a picture of a piece of cheese in the mouse trap. What did you catch? A picture of a mouse, right? So that's what I feel. I've been getting pictures of chocolate, and she was getting the real thing. And that's when I understood that there's waiting, and then there's waiting. That is, all forms of waiting are not created equally. Some people get to wait with chocolate. That is, their life before the Messiah comes is not all that bad. While others, like the Jews in the time of Isaiah, or the Jews in the time of Christ, or the Jews that are or like African Americans in this country, or like the members of the African National Congress in the time of Mandela, that their waiting did not come with chocolate. So when I hear people proclaim the coming of the Messiah for the first time or the second time or however many times, I also wonder a bit about the nature of their waiting. Are they waiting with chocolate, or are they a voice crying out in the wilderness? So as we come to this season, my wish to you is to have at least a little bit of chocolate in your Advent calendars, but to also remember those who are crying in the wilderness. May we join together in our closing hymn, number 224.